I am so excited to share with you today something I found. This was 2 years ago. This is American National Academy of Ozone Therapy. And this is an interview with the doctor, the dentist, one of the dentists I worked with and went to that is super famous in Texas. When I talk about amazing dentists that saved my life and saved my health, this was this dentist's office. And they have no idea I'm promoting them. I love promoting people. They have no idea I'm promoting them. This is so impactful and intriguing that you have to hear the whole thing. And so it's kind of long. But I want you to get takeaway with the power of ozone therapy and dentistry. Okay? I want you just to hear some.
Board certified naturopathic medicine and integrated biological dental medicine. He holds a master's degree in nutrition. He serves on the teaching faculty of the Academy of Comprehensive Integrative Medicine and the American College of Integrative Medicine and Dentistry. He holds fellowships with the Academy of General Dentistry, the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, and of course, the American Academy of Ozonotherapy. So let's all give a warm, warm welcome to Dr. Nunley. Thanks, Stuart.
It is a joy to be here again. This is one of my very favorite conferences, and I've told people in the past that if I were going to surrender and move to another country, I would take my wife, my grandkids, I'd take my kids too, and I would take my ozone generator and several cases of vitamin C, and I think we could make it. And I'm going to show you something today that I did actually present recently. It's a little bit against what I typically do, but I'm going to show you 9 case histories of primarily just dentistry. And by that I mean these patients have gotten a whole lot of things other than dentistry when they came to our office, including being prayed for and listened to maybe in a way that they were unaccustomed to in the past. But for the most part, these case histories represent dentistry only, and not much else in the way of adjunctive therapies. I want you to know that my recordings are not quite as polished as some, because I just simply took my iPhone out and recorded these folks, 7 of them in my office, and the other 2 were kind enough to send in their own recordings. And so you're going to see some rough footage, and you're going to hear background noise. And that's just the way it rolls. And finally, I want you to know that there won't be a great emphasis on ozone, but every one of these patients, except 2, had extensive ozone therapy in our office. And the other 2, I've been able to follow now for 17 to 19 years. And that was long before we began ozone in our office, which I think was 12 years ago. So let's go. This title is The Tooth, the Whole Tooth, and Nothing But the Tooth, So Help Me God. But sometimes it's The Tooth, the Whole Tooth, Nothing But the Tooth, So Help Me God. Like, it's like, help me God with this one. This is a really challenging, challenging case. And so I'm going to take it from the more mundane to some of the most dramatic things I've ever seen in dentistry. We'll start with Gary, and also I am letting these patients reveal their own chief complaints, and they've been kind enough to let me video them and show them to you, and also to put them on YouTube, but I didn't list, as we would typically in case reports, all of their history, because I didn't really want to reveal that about them, but they will tell you enough, I think, that you get the whole story. So let's see about Gary.
Prior to treatment, I had severe sinus congestion. In fact, every day I'd wake up, I couldn't breathe through my nose at all. And it would take about 2 hours with some medicine and using some drainage techniques to be able to start to breathe through my nose. Amazingly, the day after I had these 3 root canal teeth removed, by Dr. Nunnally. I could breathe through my nose. I woke up and I could breathe through my nose for the first time in the morning in a long time. And ever since then, it's been about 6 weeks, my nose is still clear. I haven't taken one decongestant since that time, and I was on them daily before that.
So in Gary's case, we removed three upper root canal treated teeth. Interestingly enough, he wanted to leave his implant, and he had another root canal tooth next to it. That's not typical. We would typically remove all of the root canals and oftentimes even the titanium implant. But in his case, his chief complaint was his chronic sinusitis. And interestingly enough, even this is a cone beam scan of Gary. Even after we removed the teeth 3 months later, he still has this infiltrate in his sinus. All of this being the infiltrate, this was his upper left molar that was removed, and yet he still says he can breathe unimpededly. So what I would say about that is I've oftentimes seen these sinusitis issues very, very difficult to clear up, even when we remove the root canal teeth. Sometimes that microbiome has become so dense and impacted that these have to be mechanically removed before the patient has relief of a sinusitis problem. But in his case, he's doing very, very well. So that all makes sense, doesn't it? In a dental office, you remove root canal treated teeth and you would expect someone's sinusitis to get better. I can't tell you how often when we do a cone beam on patients that you'll see this inflammation in the sinus right above the root canal treated tooth. So for this audience would think that focal infection was a normal thing, that you can have infection located somewhere in the body and then have a distant site that is impacted by that infection. But for somehow in dentistry, mainly I think in an effort to protect endodontic therapy, we abandoned the focal theory of infection years ago that Weston Price introduced. And but interestingly enough, it's really made a comeback. I've just reviewed 25 papers in the last month, and the majority of those papers suggest that there's increasing evidence over the past three or so decades that due to bacteremia, the oral cavity can indeed serve as a reservoir for systemic dissemination of pathogenic bacteria and their toxins, leading to infections and inflammation in distant body sites. That's a very common theme now in the literature. So I think dentists have been reluctant to think that a root canal treated tooth could be the focus of infection for a sinus infection, which is the most bizarre thing in the world because the roots of the upper molar teeth oftentimes even extend into the sinus. So the next patient I want to show you is Patty. She has a chief complaint of migraine headaches. I know Patty very well because she's been a hygienist for me for 25 years. And so let's hear Patty's story. So Patty, years ago we did treatment for you, and I know we were very hopeful to help with your migraine headaches.
Yes.
So would you give your history and just sure. to let the audience know?
Okay. Well, prior to the removal of the tooth, it ached all the time. But just thinking that was just part of the healing of the root canal. But I suffered from life-altering, crippling migraine headaches where at least once a month I would be down for 3 days with terrible pain despite the newest and latest and greatest migraine medications, sensitivity to light, vomiting, and it would last for about 3 days, and that would occur probably at least once or twice a month. After removal of the root canal tooth, I went several months without a migraine, and probably at about the eighth month, whispered, "I haven't had a migraine," because I was afraid to say it out loud, and I've never had a migraine since.
beautiful. What tooth did we remove?
It was tooth number 13.
Did I do the root canal for you?
No, sir. I had the root canal done in New York.
Oh, I'm so glad. And the truth of it is I did probably 2,000 root canals in my history before I became aware of the research that was being done at the University of Kentucky by Boyd Haley. I remember the very specifically the day that my wife and I went to hear Boyd, and I went to see Boyd in his lab, and we came away from that absolutely, well, I'll tell you how we came about. On Monday morning, we called six patients who were scheduled for root canals in the next couple of days. I filed them in one by one and said, listen, I can't do a root canal again. Interestingly enough, they were all, they said, well, we want to do whatever you'd recommend. And so that was the end of our, in our office of doing root canals. I think that was 17 or 18 years ago. Well, we're going to go to a little bit more advanced issue. In this particular case, Nikki has cavitated lesions. I'll explain what a cavitation is in just a moment. But her chief complaint is Hashimoto's, lupus, and chronic fatigue. So let's hear Nikki's story.
I'm excited to share my story with you. I'm 42 years old, and I have suffered over the last 7 years and diagnosed with lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and Hashimoto's disease. It started out with food allergies, rashes. I couldn't have gluten. I couldn't have dairy. I went to several doctors. No one could help me. There were some times I couldn't take care of my family. I couldn't open water bottles because my hands wouldn't close. I would wake up and my knee would hurt so bad that I'd have to get on crutches. Sometimes my foot would hurt where I would walk with a limp. And this happened, went over for 7 years. I was losing my hair. I had rashes on my face. And one of my dad's friends, Dr. Hines out in San Angelo, heard about my story, and he called me and he told me all about cavitations and that could be my problem. So I did some research and I listened to what he told me to do. So I went and got a cone beam scan, and lo and behold, I had 4 cavitations in every site that my wisdom teeth were taken out. And that was when I was 16. So my first symptom started at 35, June 28, 2018. I came and had the surgery. Thank you very much. I am symptom free. My blood work is clean. My blood work has been bad for over 5 years. They did my blood work 4 months after surgery, and there is no sign of any autoimmune disease. I've had 0 symptoms. I have my life back. I'm playing with my kids. I'm working out. I just want to thank you.
So that's not something we typically think about happening as a result of a dental visit. But in her case, she had cavitated sites where she'd had her wisdom teeth removed all those years ago. And if you look at this, this is normal, healthy bone. This is what we would hope to see after a tooth had been removed. But this is the bone that we see when a tooth has been removed. Most often it's from a tooth or some sort of trauma to the mandible. This is the mandible. Also, this happens in the maxilla. And we get this mushy-looking bone that's filled with anaerobic bacteria and their toxins. This particular bone is virtually avascular. It may have a little bit of perfusion, but for the most part, it's avascular. And the toxicity is basically unrivaled. The toxicity of a cavitation can easily approach that of a root canal treated tooth. And so why wouldn't you expect something like this? If you had this in your hip, if you had avascular necrosis of the hip, you'd be very, very concerned. But it's interesting how we in dentistry have passed these lesions up for year after year. So in her case, just cleaning out those 4 lesions, she had a beautiful set of teeth, absolutely transformed her life. And the treatment, for the most part, I know many of you in here use ozone to treat this, and I think it can be a very effective treatment. I don't typically get to see the patients, but just a few days. They come in most often, fly in on Sunday. We see them on Monday for exams, do their treatment on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, and then they're gone. So in our case, we do what's the literature calls us to do, and that is to decorticate that bone and then surgically curette out the lesion. So that's what we do. We curette those out, and then we pack those full of platelets from a platelet-rich fibrin technique. We use ozone in and around the area, and of course, I'm a big fan of IV vitamin C, and these patients all have a number of other adjunctive therapies like acupressure before and after, and a number of things to help them get well. In the literature, if you look, there are 12 studies that talk about cavitated lesions and how often they don't heal. In those 12 studies, 40% did not heal. But today, using what we're doing, we think we're close to 0%. Most all of these heal now using the adjunctive therapies that we do. And I think platelets have been one of the great, great aids for us. We have studies on these way back, going to when Boyd owned this lab, Boyd Haley, that showed the toxicity associated with these. We have other studies now. A fantastic researcher and named Johann Lechner from Munich has done a number of studies now and published them, showing not only the toxicity associated with these, but also the very insidious cytokines that are released and are associated with these lesions. And here's some of his research. You can go, all of his research is available at Science Direct, and I'm very, very impressed with what he's done over the last few years. Well, most of these lesions, like in the case of this young lady, Nikki, are not painful. She had no idea that she had four lesions. She had to be informed by a wonderful integrative physician in Texas that she might have this. But occasionally, these are incredibly painful, and occasionally they will result in trigeminal neuralgia. You would think that maybe something like this in the mandible would be painful. It's very interesting how rarely it is. But what can happen is the toxins from these, and these toxins are now being more and more identified, can leach down in here to the inferior alveolar nerve. The inferior alveolar nerve is this bundle right here, and it's a large branch of the trigeminal nerve. And when it's about the size of pencil lead, we can see it sometimes when we clean out these lesions. And if you look at this, especially at autopsy, you can tell that the nerve has been delaminated. And so it becomes frayed. And in the case of a trigeminal neuralgia, the toxins from the lesion progress. They progress up the nerve to the Gasserian ganglion. And then for some unknown reason, the pain seems to manifest most often in this second division of the nerve. So these patients come in, and typically they are just walking in like this, trying to make sure that the wind doesn't blow across their face. They haven't washed their face. They can't put makeup on their face. They don't want to comb their hair oftentimes. They're just in excruciating pain. Trigeminal neuralgia is known in the literature as the most painful of all human afflictions. It's also known as the suicide disease. So when these patients come in, it's a real treat for us to be able to solve this particular problem. I think about 95% of trigeminal neuralgias are a result of a tooth extraction gone bad. And interestingly enough, it's usually a lower wisdom tooth that's caused the pain up here. So we can simply clean out the infection in the lower wisdom tooth, and most often, and this is what the literature says, 75% of the time the patients will get over it completely, 20% of the time they get better, and 5% unfortunately get worse. We've experienced that exactly in our practice. 75% get over it, 20% get better, And very rarely, but occasionally, a patient gets worse. If they get worse, we send them for CyberKnife surgery. The nerve is resected. The pain is typically gone, and they've spent $175,000 doing it. But they at least can live without pain. Let's see. Let me see. Get a little sip. So I want Tara to tell you her story about trigeminal neuralgia.
Well, I originally had pain in my teeth up here, and I'll make this as short as I can, but I ended up with two root canals that actually did not take away that pain, and then had a procedure called an apicoectomy. And during that procedure, I came out with worse pain after that. And that was a long journey after that. For about 2 years, going to multiple dentists, doctors, I ended up at two peripheral nerve surgeons at Johns Hopkins, who basically said I must have sustained some nerve damage, or the person who performed the apicoectomy maybe cut that nerve. And anyway, what started out as tooth pain turned into and even more facial pain and exacerbated it, that procedure did. And man, my life was blending food and not being able to do all the daily things that we take for granted, like singing or kissing my husband or going outside when it was cold or whatever, but life was hard. And I don't even remember the like crazy circuitous path that took me to your office, but I was thrilled that it was only 3 hours away. That seemed like a bonus because I had been running around like everywhere looking for help. And when I came to you, I was in a really sad state. I mean, suicidal at times because of my facial pain, and very, very hopeless. And anyway, after our first meeting, you suspected I had cavitations, and you explained to me why you pulled root canal teeth, which I had three root canals. And I felt in good hands and comforted, and like there was a piece of the puzzle that nobody had brought to the table ever before. And so I had my surgery to deal with all of that. And I can say that it changed my life. And yeah, because I had been in a very, very bad place. And I had some immediate relief and difference, but it was kind of a slow process. But I went from at one point taking 1200 milligrams of Neurontin and you know, feeling like a zombie and blending all my food, and to eating salads again and being able to do all the things that I had not done. And at this point, I maybe have like a teeny bit of residual, which I believe is actually from the procedure and not what I think is cleaning the cavitations, taking the root canals out, basically ameliorated what had first caused the pain. Now, I think I still have a little bit of residual left over from having that procedure and maybe hurting that nerve, but it's very, very manageable. And you changed my life. And you changed my perspective on overall health, actually. And I believe that cleaning out my cavitations and getting rid of my root canals actually impacted other things that I had been dealing with in my health. You know, so that was super important. Thyroid stuff, all sorts of things kind of dissipated as well.
So the thing that you should take away from this is that oftentimes when a patient has trigeminal neuralgia, it's misdiagnosed as a root canal type tooth, as root canal pain. Even I remember years ago doing two root canals on a man who had trigeminal neuralgia. I simply didn't know how to test for it. And so in her case, the this pain, this trigeminal pain. In her case, she had two root canals plus an apicoectomy done when it was a trigeminal pain caused from a lower cavitation site. And then going through those 2 months. And the other thing that we is a takeaway from her testimony, I think, is the fact is once you flip someone's systemic illness, as you see, once you uncover that one part of the onion, then other things begin to get better. All of a sudden, she begins to be able, her nutrition's better. She can eat. She's beginning to be able to get outside. And all of a sudden, we have this cascade where we go the other way. And it's one of the most beautiful things that we get to see. And so this next patient is another patient who I've had the privilege of following. She and the other hygienist have both been with me for 25 years. And I should say with us, I have one of my fabulous partners here, Lane Freeman, with me today. And Lane and I have seen this lady go through this amazing phase of being a very, very healthy woman to being hit one day at one of her daughter's softball games by a softball that came over the fence and got her right in the mouth. And so I want you to hear about Tabby's history, and I'll wrap it up with some amazing things that we've seen because of her injury. So Tabby, can you give me a little history of what happened to you when we did your dentistry years ago, and what kind of impact that had on your systemic health?
Okay, good. Going on 18, 19 years ago, I started having some health issues, and before that, previously, I had gotten hit in the mouth with a softball, and we thought the teeth were going to be okay, but one, abscessed, and not realizing how a root canal could harm you, I went ahead and had a root canal, and that went on. Dr. Nunley did the root canal, and then about 6 months later or so, another tooth abscessed, and I had a root canal. And
who did the second root canal?
Dr. Nunley did the second root canal. And that one kept bothering me, and we decided that it had re-abscessed, so we did what was called an apico. We redid the root canal, and Dr. Nunley did that also. And it felt good. I was healthy. I felt I had three children. I worked full time, and then I started feeling bad a few months later. Achy joints. I felt like I had the flu. I had burning legs, achy feet, just chronic fatigue. And I ran to the doctor, and just a regular MD, and he said, "Oh, I think you have a virus." And went on, and I kept getting worse and worse. And I finally went back and said, "Oh, my hands are swelling. I just feel terrible." And lucky enough, he knew what test to run, and he ran a SED rate and an ANA to test for autoimmune disease. And it the SED rate was fine, but the anti-nuclear antibodies test came back positive that I had an autoimmune disease. And so he decided to send me to a rheumatologist, but in the meantime, I called Dr. Nunley, and we had gotten all the new information on root canals, and Dr. Nunley said, "You need to get rid of those teeth." So we decided, we prayed about it, and we decided to have the teeth, two of my front teeth extracted. And then I went back and we redid my fillings and cavitations. And then I went back and had my blood test done again. And those antibodies had dropped. And I continued to do well. And it took about a year to get my strength back. And then several years later, the symptoms started coming back. And sure enough, I had another abscess tooth. And then Dr. Nunley took this tooth out and cleaned it out, and the symptoms went away.
So this has been a case that we've been able to follow cause and effect for the last 17 years, 18 years since we did the treatment. And she's robustly healthy now. And at any rate, I'm very thankful for the fact that she's been close by and we've been able to see this. So this focal infection is just recently published, or this one, I think, in 2013. says the findings from the present study indicate that apical periodontitis is associated with generalized increased systemic inflammatory markers and immunoglobulin levels when compared with healthy controls. So what happened in Tabby's case is I did the second root canal. It didn't heal. She had a little lesion up at the top of it, so I did what's called an apicoectomy, where we make an incision, take the tip of the root off, clean it out from the tip of the root side, and then actually it looked fine on the x-ray, but she began to have her issues. This particular term of apical periodontitis is one you see now very frequently in the literature. And then most oftenly you see it as chronic apical periodontitis, or CAP, as no one really wants to confess that maybe the root canal itself is toxic, but it's just the tip of the lesion that's toxic. But at any rate, these have been very well investigated. Tom Levy's written a book about it called Hidden Epidemic. And in there, we learn that there are a number of inflammatory markers that are released from these root canal-treated teeth. So let's listen to Rachel's testimony, because her chief complaint is crippling plantar fasciitis. Now, what on earth would a tooth have to do with plantar fasciitis until you go to the teeth meridian chart, and you'll see that almost all of these molars have something to do with the feet. So let's look and listen to Rachel's story. If we can. So Rachel, if you would just describe a little bit about what happened to you in terms of doing your dentistry and the impact that it had on your systemic health.
Yes, Dr. Nunley, I had 7 root canal teeth that I had placed or had done over the past 30 years. My first root canal was done when I was in high school, and I did not know the impact that this was having on my health until I joined the team here, and I didn't really realize how bad I felt. And when Dr. Nunley looked at my x-rays and told me that there was infection present underneath these existing root canals, I knew they needed to be taken out. So Dr. Nunley removed these in August of 2017. And I had been suffering with plantar fasciitis really bad and overall body fatigue. And once I had those teeth removed, I started noticing immediately a difference in my health. My pain in my feet went away right away, and I slowly started improving over the following months after my procedure. And I am so thankful that this was done, because I don't know how much damage I could have done if I left these teeth in place.
Do you currently have any more plantar fasciitis, or did it completely go away?
It completely went away.
How long do you think it took for it to go away, Rachel?
It was within a matter of a day or two after my procedure.
Now, Rachel walked like a 95-year-old. She barely hobbled down the hallways in our offices. They're easy to get videos of employees. So, once again, we were amazed at what happened. But here's an interesting thing that was just published in 2014. And that's this: even after chemomechanical preparation and 3 minutes of 17% EDTA and 30 days of calcium hydroxide plus chlorhexidine in the root canal, the endotoxins still persisted. So they're very, very potent endotoxins. No one treats root canals like this and leaves chlorhexidine in the tooth for 30 days and then comes back to fill it. 99% of all root canals are a one-step procedure where you enter the tooth, do the root canal, and fill it on the same day. But even after 30 days of leaving chlorhexidine in the tooth, you still have endotoxins persistent. And that's one of the problems, is that Rachel, in her case, these endotoxins leached into her system. And not only were they on meridians that impacted her feet, but the toxins had a powerful impact as well. Let's look at Tina. Tina had Hashimoto's, depression, weight gain, chronic fatigue, and ankle pain. Let's listen to her story.
And through pretty much educating myself about dental health, I discovered that all my issues are probably coming from my teeth. I grew up in a poor Eastern European country, and I had bad dental health through my whole life. I had a mouthful of amalgam filling since I was 3 years old. I had three really bad root canals done that were in my mouth for decades. And so finally, I took matters into my own hands. My root canal teeth were removed, and all three of them were the only three teeth in the whole mouth that actually connect to the thyroid gland on the meridian chart. I had Dr. Nandi fix four cavitation sites on three of my wisdom teeth and one of my teeth that was removed through the years. Also on one of the sites that 13 and 14 teeth who were removed inappropriately, and there were two root canal teeth who developed cavitation there. So I had six sites done by Dr. Nandi. And since then, I had a lifelong migraines pain that were gone in a second. I had sinus discharge that was nonstop, and that was gone in a second. I had sinus migraines daily, and they were never ending, and nothing was helping me. And that was gone in a second. I had a known pain in my right ankle that I went to three very famous surgeons to look into my ankle, and no one could actually find out what was wrong with the ankle, and they just wanted to open up the ankle and to see if something's wrong. And one of my teeth was actually connected on the meridian chart to cause something called medial ankle pain, which was also gone as the tooth was removed and the site was cleaned. Since then, I have been in perfect health. I'm just taking my thyroid medication, but I feel great. None of my Hashimoto's like major symptoms is weakness and weight gain and headaches and depression and sadness and fatigue. All of this is gone, and I just feel great. I feel amazing.
If you look, interestingly enough, the ankle pain that she had was from one of these molars that we cleaned out, and it's medial ankle pain on her teeth meridian chart. And to think that that would resolve overnight when she had had three consults to see what could be done about that. And the other thing that's so compelling, I think, about her testimony is this. Weston Price described leaky teeth over 100 years ago when he published in 1923 these two large volumes, 1,044 pages in those volumes, that where he demonstrated the connection between diseased teeth and systemic disease. And he talked about leaky teeth, and we all know leaky gut, and we all know that the lipopolysaccharide endotoxin is what we can see and even evaluate from leaky gut. Well, interestingly enough, now in the literature just published 2018, dental health and leaky teeth may be intimately linked to the etiology and course of depression while significantly impacting the quality of life. In fact, look at the title of this article. Increased root canal endotoxin levels are associated with chronic apical periodontitis, increased oxidative nitrosative stress, major depression, severity of depression, and a lower quality of life. 2018. And to tell you the truth, that description right there pretty well identifies my patients and their complaints. It's very, very interesting. And I can't tell you how often removing root canal treated teeth has ended up in resolving those issues. Here it is again, same article. An increased load correlates, LPS load, lipopolysaccharide load, correlates positively with chronic fatigue, which is associated with neurocognitive deficits, abdominal discomfort, muscular tension and fatigue. Does that sound like your patients? All in all, elevated root canal levels of LPS and CAP are associated with depression and a lowered quality of life. Pam has an interesting story too, and I wanted to emphasize one of the major emphases in the current literature is between that of root canal treated teeth and heart disease. Of course, Weston Price elucidated this clearly way back, and he was motivated to do that because he had done a root canal on his own son who died 2 weeks later of a heart attack. And being the researcher that he was, he took the tooth that he had done the root canal on this son. He took that tooth from his son after he had died, and he took a portion of that tooth and embedded it into the belly skin of a rabbit. That rabbit died of heart attack. He then did that to 99 other rabbits. 100 consecutive rabbits died of heart failure as a result of taking a little portion of his son Donald's root canal treated tooth. So this particular lady, Pam, talks about heart palpitations. I wanted to bring it up because we have much in the literature now associating root canal treated teeth with cardiovascular events. And this published in 2016. This is from the Baltimore Longitudinal Study of Aging, which has been going on now since 1958. Apical periodontitis, by the way, this little dark spot right here at the tip of a root canal treated tooth, or it doesn't necessarily have to been root canal treated, this is called chronic apical periodontitis. So apical periodontitis may contribute to cardiovascular disease through metastatic pathways, such as the spread of the infection through transient bacteremias, a metastatic injury by circulating toxins, or systemic inflammation. And apical periodontitis, or root canal treated teeth in midlife, is an independent risk factor of cardiovascular events. This is from the Baltimore Longitudinal Study of Aging. And subjects with apical periodontitis, by the way, we just took this picture a week or two ago in our office. This is a 2D scan. This looks like a perfectly normal molar, but if you put it on 3D cone beam, you'll see these lesions at the tip of the root. If everybody can see that, that's the advantage of having a 3D scan or a cone beam, is you can see lesions like this that you would never see over here. But subjects with apical periodontitis were more likely to have cardiovascular disease than subjects without periodontitis by 5.3-fold. Now, that's a nice way of saying 5.3-fold. It's a nice way of saying 530%. So if you have apical periodontitis, you're at a 530% increased risk of a cardiovascular incident. By the way, 40% of root canal treated teeth in the world, 40% have chronic apical periodontitis associated with them. There have been 17 studies done in 16 countries to identify that fact. And the findings suggest that these bacteria may have a role in the formation of rupturing of intracranial aneurysms. In other words, in the way they've discovered this is that you can take the plaque from either a coronary artery or from a cerebral artery at the time of the aneurysm or at the time of the infarction. You can take a sample of that plaque and you will identify the exact same bacteria that you find in an endodontically treated tooth. Interestingly enough, systemic disease contributes to root canal, the need for root canal treatment, and to this phenomenon of apical periodontitis. Even diabetes is significantly associated to a higher prevalence of periapical radial lucencies in endodontically treated teeth. And our good friend Johann Lechner studied a huge number of patients with systemic disease, and he found that 99% of those patients had chronic apical periodontitis, not 40%, 99% of these patients with systemic disease had chronic apical periodontitis associated with their root canal treated teeth. Let's listen to Pam's story.
On March 1st, 2018, I had a procedure and it involved the removal of four root canal treated teeth, one large crown tooth, and the cleaning out of four cavitation sites where my wisdom teeth had previously been removed many years earlier. Prior to this procedure, I was very, very sick. I had lost 73 pounds. I had an elevated heart rate. I had heart palpitations. And I'd had that for like 14 months, and for 7 years before that, I was completely incapacitated, unable to talk, chew, move my neck, project my voice, be upright. I had to use a voice amplifier, and I had a lot of difficulty getting around. I was basically bedridden for 7 years prior to this procedure. Immediately after the procedure, my heart rate was down. I woke up and was recovering in my hotel room, and I realized my heart rate was in the 60s. It had been in the hundreds for 2 years. The heart palpitations were gone. A lot of all the other symptoms have improved. It's been 10 months since my procedure, and my digestion is very close to normal. I can eat many different foods. The rashes have gone away. I can talk. I can chew food. I can go out. I can drive. I can cook. I can clean. I do all my own cooking. So pretty much it's the best thing that I ever did. So there is one thing that I would like to say, and that is, you know, when this happened to me, my son was 6 years old, and now he's 13. And we missed so many things together. It is my hope that we can educate other people as to the perils of root canal therapy, so that this doesn't happen to other children. They won't be without their mother or their father for so many of the things in their lives during their childhood. So I want to thank you for listening to my story, which has a happy ending.
Interestingly enough, now even in the endodontic literature, this conclusion is one that you wouldn't have seen in the up until the last few years. It says there seems to be a paradigm shift. This is in the Journal of Dental Research. There seems to be a paradigm shift in the field of endodontics from a field of pain management, tooth preservation, and control of infections toward a perspective where all oral infections are risks for systemic complications. And in this particular study, they demonstrated an association between endodontic lesions and cardiologic outcomes, especially acute coronary syndrome or heart attacks, which was independent of periodontitis. We've known about the relationship between periodontitis and cardiovascular events for some time, but now more and more the literature is pointing also to root canal lesions. I referenced a minute ago this study by Lechner, in which 323 of 324 teeth had chronic apical periodontitis, and these were in patients with systemic disease. So I'm saved the very best for last. I have to tell you about Dawn. When I saw Dawn, I think she was 17. She was in a wheelchair, curled up, drooling, and communicated by moving one finger and blinking. And her mother was one of the most persistent fighters I've ever seen. She wasn't going to let this girl go. And I wanted you to hear the story. The interesting thing about Dawn is that I completely lost track of her. We saw her 13 years ago. This was before ozone in my office. And we lost track of her. But when we began to think about doing this presentation where we put together these case histories, interestingly enough, she called us out of the blue. She had moved back to Texas from New York to tell us how she was doing. I want you to hear Dawn's story.
In 2001, I was a freshman in high school, and I was at volleyball practice one day and started to get just, I was uncoordinated, where I had played sports for years and was very good, and so I knew something was wrong with me. So I went to the doctor, and I was only 14 at the time, so I didn't really get taken seriously until my eye went lazy, and then the doctor sent me for MRIs and referred me to a neurologist, and I got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I did treatments like plasmapheresis, chemotherapy, IVIG, MS meds, where I gave myself injections. I did a lot of different treatments, and no results, just got worse. So then at that point, the doctor basically said I had probably 6 months to live because I was just getting worse and worse and worse. So my mom at that point was like, not okay with that. So she did a lot of research and found a doctor of osteopathy in Austin who listened to the history. I had had my wisdom teeth pulled days before the onset of symptoms. And so when he heard that, he sent me to Dr. Nunnally to get my teeth checked. And Dr. Nunnally found cavitations from my wisdom tooth surgery. And after that, he did surgery. And within 6 months, I started walking assisted. And then I did physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, worked with a personal trainer. And within a year and a half, I was walking on my own. And this is me 13 years later. And now people think I just have some weird accent.
So when I saw her, I was scared to death, honestly, to sedate her for fear that she wouldn't survive that. But her mother was so such a fierce defender of her that we did it. And I never dreamed that cleaning out those lesions, she had a perfectly good set of teeth, might have that kind of impact. And I still, but if you look at the lesions that you can see in these autopsied mandibles, you can see where something like that might pose that kind of a problem. But I do want you to know that we actually would never take credit for that. This girl was prayed over and loved on, and we feel like God healed her. We just got to be a part of it. And we would never claim that we did that. But I will say that she would. When she called us to tell us how well she was doing, she lives now only about an hour and a half from where we were, and we went to meet her at a restaurant and take her as one of the most wonderful dinners I've had with anyone, and then we videoed her outside the restaurant. And so it's a wonderful conclusion to the story here today, except that I want to tell you that we get to see many versions of that, minuscule versions of that, almost every day in our practice. It's an amazing thing. I'm so incredibly grateful for the fact that I got sick myself 17 years ago, and it's actually turned out to be one of the greatest blessings that I get to see these wonderful patients who I never would have been able to empathize with before. I want to share with you a quote out of Tom Levy's book, and then I'll wrap it up. And that is that when occult toxin-producing infections can be identified and eliminated, and that being maybe in a root canal or chronic apical periodontitis, the primary disease resolution, that is getting rid of this disease, can sometimes be seen along with symptom resolution. So these other bizarre symptoms, maybe even as bizarre as what Dawn had, resolve when you get rid of that focal area of infection. And then there's this, you know, we as dentists, we like to fix things that are broken or are painful. We're really good at that. And otherwise, we've been pretty much relegated, in my opinion, to being carpenters. We cut down teeth, we make them look pretty, but we forget our biochemistry, and we forget that what we do might have an impact on someone's systemic health. But we are reticent to treat things that aren't painful. The problem is if we had not treated those cavitated areas of Dawn, we might not have seen that kind of resolution, or Tina, or Tabby, or any of those patients. Most of these patients did not have painful lesions. And so the quote is, if we only treated painful lesions, periodontal disease would almost never be treated. Oral cancer and most other cancers would not be treated until they were in stage. The presence or absence of pain is only one consideration in whether we treat. Now, I want to share with you, only because this has really come to light recently as a result of a video called Root Cause, I wanted to share with you a couple of things, because you as practitioners are going to get hit from the other side. And the other side is this, and this comes from the American Association of Endodontics fact sheet. While plenty of good information is available online from the American Academy or Association of Endodontics and other reliable resources, patients sometimes arrive in the dental office with misinformation. This has occurred with the long-dispelled focal infection theory in endodontics, introduced in the early 1900s. In the 1920s, Dr. Weston Price presented research suggesting that bacteria trapped in dental tubules during root canal treatment could leak and cause almost any type of degenerative disease, arthritis, diseases of the kidney, heart, nervous, gastrointestinal, endocrine, and other systems. This was before medicine understood the cause of these diseases. So that's right off of their fact sheet. And then, as a result of the movie, which some of us in here were in, and that debuted on Netflix in January, the ADA president sent a message to, I think, all dentists. I certainly got it, and all the dentists that I know of got this. If your patients ask you, so this is telling us as dentists how to respond, if a patient asks us about root canal treatment, if your patients ask you about the safety of root canals, here are some suggested talking points. There are four talking points. The first one is, approximately 25 million new endodontic treatments, including root canals, are performed safely and effectively each year. That's in the U.S. 25 million at about $25 billion in cost. No one said there that 40% of those are going to have chronic apical periodontitis associated with them. The next talking point is root canal treatment eliminates bacteria from an infected tooth, prevents reinfection of the tooth, and saves the natural tooth, which is incorrect. That's totally incorrect. And even the literature, the current endodontic literature, would dispute that. And then the other talking points were the film. In other words, the film Root Cause is based on research conducted in the 1920s that was later disproved, which now in the current literature, of course, has been disproved. Of course, the focal theory of infection is a valid theory. And finally, decades of research show that there is no valid scientific link between endodontically treated teeth and cancer or any chronic diseases. I can barely read that without laughing. So those are the four talking points, and you will be hit with those talking points. But now you have the data to tell you otherwise, and I want to thank you for this privilege of being here today. Okay, you may have some questions. Okay, let's just go. Robert, I got Rob.
You mentioned that sometimes you even take out the implants that are done instead of the root canals. So what do you put in place of the root canals and the implants? What's safe to put in?
Oh, that's a great question. And to tell you the truth, titanium implants can be an issue. There is more and more in the literature about titanium toxicity. So sometimes the titanium implant is on a meridian that disrupts other organ systems, and some patients don't tolerate that well. We know, obviously, millions and millions of people have titanium implants, titanium joints, and I think there's a difference, honestly, between titanium implants, which are exposed 24/7 to a bacteria, as opposed to those that are used in prosthetics. So what do we put in their place? We are much more fond of zirconia implants. They have a better track record, in our opinion, and seem to be much more biocompatible. We don't routinely remove all implants, but sometimes the patient's history will dictate that the patients will report, "I was doing great until this implant was placed." And so many times we have those patients have been tested energetically and otherwise by other practitioners, and they can identify this implant is a problem. And I cannot tell you the numbers of patients who respond incredibly to having titanium implants removed. Others, as you know, some people handle titanium.
All right, he goes and answers a whole bunch more questions. You can listen to the whole thing. I don't like it to go that long. I thought this was such a good conversation. I have root canals. I didn't get the root canals out yet. I was step by step because, I mean, when I first saw a biological dentist, he wanted me to spend $20,000 on my mouth, and I was freaked the shit out. So I've taken it in baby steps, and I'm repairing my health and repairing my oral health. And I do a whole bunch of things to maintain good oral health. And so I hope this was a great conversation about dentistry, about oral health, about really everything starts in your mouth. So I hope that you enjoyed this one.